all too blissful. Jacob's son was almost as weary with standing before Pharaoh as when he had played dumb waiter for the old pair in the garden house. And young Pharaoh, for all his delicacy of feeling for the gnats, the chicks, the little mouse, and the offspring of the worm, seemed to have no thought for Joseph's discomfort. His delicacy was of a regal kind. It had lapses. To neither him nor the mother goddess on her high seat did the idea occur, and probably it could not, to tell him to sit down a while. His limbs had great longing, and there were many charming little stools in the Cretan loggia to invite him thereto. It was hard, but when one knows what is involved, one just takes the hardship for granted and stands firm. And here we have a good instance of a literally correct usage. The goddess widow took it on herself to clap her hands when her son announced his desire. The chamberlain from the anteroom sidled sweetly through the bee curtain. He rolled up his eyes when T flung at him, "Pharaoh summons the great consort," and disappeared again. Amenhotep stood at one of the great bay windows with his back to the room and looked out over the gardens, his chest and his whole body heaving with the violence of the homage he paid to the sun and its works. His mother was looking towards him with concern. But only a few minutes passed before she appeared whom he had summoned. She could not have been far away. A little door, invisible among the paintings, opened in the right-hand wall, and two maidservants fell on their faces on the threshold. Between them, the Queen of the Lands appeared, with swaying tread, faintly smiling, her eyes cast down, the long, lovely neck thrust anxiously out, the bearer of the seed of the sun. She did not speak. Her hair was covered with a blue cap, which hung in a bag behind, elongating the shape of her head. Her large, thin, finely turned ears were uncovered. Navel and thighs showed through the ethereal pleatings of her flowing garb. The bosom was covered with a shoulder drapery and a flower collar glittering with enamel and gems. She moved with hesitant steps towards her young husband, who approached her still panting with access of feeling. "Here art thou, golden dove, my sweet bed-sister," he said with trembling voice, embraced and kissed her on eyes and mouth, so that the two cobras on their foreheads kissed too. "I had to see thee, if only for a moment, to show thee my love. It came over me while talking. Was my summons a burden to thee? Art thou at the moment not suffering from thy present sacred condition? My majesty does wrong, perhaps, even to ask, for I might thereby rouse and recall thy nausea with my words. You see how the king has understanding of all. I would have been so grateful to the father if you had today been able to keep our excellent breakfast by you. But no more of that. Here thrones the eternal mother, and this man with the lyre is a foreign magician and soothsayer who has interpreted for me my politically important dream and can tell such amusing tales that I may keep him by me in a high office at court. He lay in prison owing to some mistake, such as can sometimes happen. Nefer Emwese, too, my cupbearer, was once in prison by mistake, while his companion there, the late chief baker, was guilty. Of two that lie in prison, one always seems to be innocent, and of three, two. This I say as a man. But as God and king, I say that prisons are necessary, notwithstanding. And as man, I kiss you, my sacred love, on your eyes, your cheeks, and mouth. Be not surprised that I do it in the presence not only of the mother, but also of the soothsaying stranger, since you know that Pharaoh loves to show himself as he is before men. I think to go even further in this direction. You do not know about that yet, nor does Mama. Therefore I take this opportunity to tell you. I am considering a pleasure voyage on the royal barge Star of the Two Lands. The populace, urged by curiosity, and also partly by my royal command, will follow along the banks in crowds, and there, in their sight, my sacred treasure, without having got permission from Amun's first priest beforehand, I will sit with you under the canopy, and hold you on my knee, and kiss you right soundly and often before all the people. That will annoy him of Karnak, but the people will exult, and it will not only show them our great happiness, but also instruct them in the essence, spirit, and goodness of my Father above. I am glad that I have now mentioned this plan of mine, but do not think I sent for you on this account, for I only happened to come on the thought as I was speaking. I called you simply and solely out of sudden, unconquerable longing to show you my tenderness. And now I have done so. Go, then, my crowning joy. Pharaoh is overwhelmed with affairs, and must take counsel on matters of high import with his dear and eternal little mamma, and with this young man, who, you must understand, comes of the stock of the inspired lamb. Go, and take great care of yourself, guarding against all jars to your person. Divert yourself with dancing and song. The babe, whatever it is, shall be called Merit Aton when you are happily brought to bed. That is, if you find it good. And I see you do. You always find everything good that Pharaoh thinks. If only the whole world would think well of what he thinks and teaches, it would be better for it. Adieu, swan's throat, little dawn cloud, golden seamed. Adieu, and au revoir. The queen swayed away again. Behind her, the picture door closed and became invisible. Amenhotep, embarrassed by his own emotions, turned back to his throne chair. Happy lands, said he, to which such a mistress is vouchsafed, and a pharaoh whom she makes so happy. Am I right to say that, mamma? Do you agree with me, soothsayer? If you stop on at my court as interpreter of the king's dreams, I will marry you off. That is my firm intention. I will myself choose the bride, befitting your office, from the higher circles. You do not know how delightful it is to be married. For my majesty, as my idea about the pleasure voyage in public will have shown you, it is the very image and expression of my human side, on which I lean more than I can say. For look, Pharaoh is not proud, and if he is not, then who in all the world should be? But in you, my friend, I feel a sort of pride, with all your charm of manner. I say a sort, for I do not know its cause, and can only suspect it has to do with what you told us, that you are in some way set apart and consecrate to silence and the deeps, as though the sacrificial garland lay on your brow, made of an herb called Touch Me Not. It was just this that gave me the idea to bestow you in marriage. I am in the hand of the Highest, answered Joseph. What he does will be beneficent. Pharaoh knows not how necessary to me was my pride to protect me from evil doing. I am set apart for God alone, who is the bridegroom of my race, and we are the bride. But as it says of the star, in the evening a woman, in the morning a man, so I suppose it is here too, and out of the bride steps forth the wooer. Such a double nature may be fitting for the son of the sly one and the lovely one, said the king with a worldly wise air. But now, he added, let us speak seriously of serious matters. Your God, who and what is he? You have neglected or avoided giving me a clear understanding. The forefather of your father, you say, discovered him? That sounds as though he had found the true and only God. Is it possible that so remote from me in space and time, a man divined that the true and only God is the sun's disk, the creator of sight and seen, my eternal Father above? No, Pharaoh, Joseph answered, smiling. He did not stop at the sun disk. He was a wanderer, and even the sun was but a way station on his painful wandering. Restless was he and unsatisfied. Call it pride, if you will, for thereby you seal your censure with the sign of honor and necessity. For it was the pride of the man that the human being should serve only the Highest. Therefore his thoughts went out beyond the sun. Amenhotep had flushed. He sat bent forward, his head in the blue wig stretched out on its neck. With the tips of his fingers he squeezed and kneaded his chin. "Mama, pay attention. By all you hold dear, pay strict attention," he breathed, without turning the fixed gaze of his gray eyes away from Joseph. His suspense was so great that it seemed he would tear away the veil which dimmed them. "Go on, you," said he. "Wait, stop. No, go on." He did not stop. He went out beyond the sun. "Speak, or I will speak myself, though I know not what I should say." "He made things hard for himself in his unavoidable pride," Joseph said. "For this he was anointed.